Good morning, everybody. Nice to see you all. Don't forget to do the thumbs up occasionally if I catch your eye, will you? Because otherwise I've just got all these eyes like this. Good morning, anybody that's watching us on Facebook. It's nice to have you joining us this morning, too. So we continue our sermon series, thinking about who is my neighbour and how do I love them more. And this morning our focus is to think about the foreigner in our midst, the foreigner in our midst. This year, as you'll be aware, there's been a controversy over the last night of the proms, with the BBC initially planning not to have the words of Rule Britannia and Land of Hope and Glory sung out loud, but instead to play them as orchestral pieces. As a teenager and a young man, I remember feeling very proud of being British. I remember having a real pride in our history, how our explorers discovered so much of the world, and then of course went on to conquer it and build the biggest empire that the world has ever seen. I remember having great pride in our monarchy, in the fact that we had the Mother of Parliaments. As a young man, it seemed to me that there was so much to be proud of. Surely we are the greatest nation on earth. I can remember once or twice watching The Last Night of the Proms on TV and feeling quite stirred with national pride as those well-known pieces were sung and everyone waved their Union Jacks. I feel a little differently now. It's not that being British isn't still important to my sense of identity. And it's not that I don't love this country. I still have a sense of being proud in being British. And I remain a loyal citizen, valuing all that's good about British life and culture. The difference is that my youthful patriotism was based on a very selective understanding of history and based on an assumption of white British superiority. My patriotism now is tempered by an uncomfortable awareness of how much of Britain's dominant place in the world has been achieved at the cost of others through colonialism and slavery. My patriotism now is no longer based on a false belief that we British are inherently greater or better or superior to any other nationality. But rather, I'm proud to be British because it's an important part of my roots and my identity. It's my nationality. It's my tribe, if you like. And I no longer feel the need to think of my country as somehow being better or superior than any other country. And indeed, my sense of identity and culture don't need to be under threat because of the increasingly multicultural aspect and part of our society. In my 20s, I had the privilege of being able to go on an exchange visit. I lived in Sheffield at the time, and it was twinned with a city in called Donetsk, which was in what was called the Ukraine then, part of the Soviet Union. It's just called Ukraine now. We were twinned with that city, so every 2 years, 25 young people from Sheffield would go over to Moscow and to Donetsk on an exchange visit, and then the alternating year, we would host 25 young people in Sheffield and London. So I went as part of this trip over to the Soviet Union, spending a bit of time in Moscow and then getting the sleeper train down from Moscow to Donetsk. It was, of course, the time of the Cold War. Yes, I am that old, believe it or not. I know. It was the time of the Cold War, and in my mind, the Russian people were very much our enemies. That's what I've been brought up to think and feel. When I arrived in Russia, I was blown away by the warmth of the welcome and the hospitality that we received. So, for example, we travelled on the sleeper train overnight down to Donetsk, and when we arrived, slightly bleary-eyed, on the platform in Donetsk, there were all these other young people gathered on the platform, and each of them had a red carnation in their hands. And as we got off the train, each of us was greeted individually with a hug and a kiss, and we were given a red carnation. And then we were all put on a bus, and we were all taken off to a civic reception at the town hall. And then we were put up in a nice hotel, because the people there wouldn't be able to afford to put us up. And every day these young people would turn up at the hotel, and they'd take us out on tours and trips to show us with great pride their city. I have to say that the hospitality and the warmth of the welcome that they offered were far better than the hospitality and the warmth of welcome that was offered to them when they came to Sheffield. There was just something about their culture that was embracing and welcoming and made us feel like honoured guests. And of course it was impossible for me to then, having had that personal experience, to go on thinking of Russians as being our enemy, because I now knew them to be human beings who are very warm and hospitable and friendly, at least the ones that I've met. In Jesus' day, the Jews thought of themselves as being special, as being God's people, God's chosen people in an exclusive sense. And they thought of the Samaritans as being their enemies. So, crudely put, to be a Jew was good, to be a Samaritan was bad. In telling the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus challenges head-on the assumptions that they were making. Their assumption of being exclusively special. Their assumption of being better than other people. Jesus was challenging their tribalism and their racism. As we know, the hero in the story is the hated Samaritan. The Samaritans were hated anyway, but this Samaritan in the story shames the good Jews by doing what they should do if they were going to honour the God that they said that they worshipped. He was the one that helped. He was the one that cared for and showed love and kindness to the man who had been beaten up on the road. So in the story, in the parable, the Jewish characters don't live out the greatest commandment, which was the foundation of their faith. Whereas the non-Jew, the Samaritan, did. Jesus, of course, told this parable in answer to the question, "Who is my neighbour?" And his answer is that our neighbour is not just people of our own kind, members of our own tribe, but everyone, including people that we might think of as being our enemies. We share a common humanity. All of humanity is created by and loved by God. And so everyone is our neighbour. Now, this shouldn't have come as a complete surprise to the Jewish leaders of Jesus' day. Because despite the Old Testament putting great emphasis on the people of Israel being God's special chosen people, actually what they needed at the time, because they were a new nation being formed, was that sense of specialness to kind of bond them together. But actually the trajectory of the Old Testament and the scripture shows that having established a sense of secure identity and worth, a sense of who we are, what our culture is, what our beliefs are, how we relate to one another, that kind of boundary having been established securely and safely, God's intention for the Israelites and for every nation since and for us now is that we grow beyond those boundaries, that we grow beyond that safe base, that sense of this is who I am and this is where I belong, to be able to embrace and to be able to reach out to others. And so those Jewish leaders of the time shouldn't have been particularly surprised, because had they paid attention to their scriptures more closely, they would have seen that there were various passages, like the one from Leviticus 19 that Sarah read a few moments ago, which are remarkably progressive. If you put those passages in their historical context, are remarkably progressive in that they make it clear that all people, regardless of race or nationality, should be treated with love and dignity and respect as human beings. So this passage from Leviticus, part of the law of the Israelite nation, part of our Old Testament, says the alien, that's the foreigner, the stranger, who resides with you, shall be to you as the citizen among you, conferring full citizen rights, citizenship rights. And it goes on, and you shall love the stranger, the foreigner, the alien, as yourself. Who is my neighbour? Everyone is my neighbour. And the foreigner in our midst is our neighbour. I think we would perhaps accept, I hope we would accept now, that there should be no distinction in the way that we treat other human beings on the basis of whether they are of the same race, nationality or religion as us. For in humanity, everyone, even our greatest enemy, is our neighbour and is loved by God. And this is challenging stuff, isn't it, as we seek to live it out and work it out in our lives. Because we have to face various prejudices that we might have. We have to overcome barriers that we might experience of language and culture. It might cause us to have to confront our fears, to try and befriend and to relate to somebody of a different culture, a different language, a different nationality, can take us out of our comfort zone. It's not as safe and as cosy as staying with our own kind. But I think our experience as a church, particularly in this part of Derby, which is so multicultural and made up of so many different ethnicities, and indeed our own congregation this morning, made up of different ethnic groups. Actually, we know this, don't we? And to a large extent, I guess I'm preaching to converted in this church, in this situation. And I feel quite proud of how accepting and inclusive our faith community is. Having said that, I don't suppose that we're perfect in this respect. In fact, I know that we're not perfect in this respect. And I'm sure we could all make more effort to get to know people in our own church family and in our neighbourhoods who are of different ethnicities and nationalities to ourselves. So we could all perhaps make a bit more effort to do that and to ensure that we have good relationships across those different groups. But of course the emphasis and the onus, I think, should always be on the host community to take most of the initiative in that, to ensure that minority groups feel welcomed and secure and accepted. I've recently been reading some writings of Richard Rohr, a Catholic priest, which have helped me to reflect on my own personal development and to see links with human development more generally. So I can see in my own growth how I have developed from needing to define myself and my own identity over and above the identity of others, that kind of very egocentric kind of view of the world. I guess this is where we all start out, isn't it, in our infancy and our childhood. And I can see how actually I've grown from that kind of firm, clear base of who I am and my identity, which tribe I belong to. I've grown from that place, from a place where actually I needed to think of Britain as being best and right, and therefore perhaps other nations by implication were not so important and didn't matter so much. To grow from that, to be able to embrace and to see that actually I don't need to see the world in that insular kind of way. And my identity isn't threatened by sharing with and building relationships with and allowing culture to be shaped by people that have come from different backgrounds and different ethnicities. Actually, that, in my experience, is a very enriching thing. And I also, as I've reflected, recognise that the same development needs to be true of all of us as individuals, as people, and of all people groups, all nations, And in international relationships, as often as is so often the case, what is true in the personal and the micro is also true in the big scale between nations and in the macro. That actually we all psychologically need to grow from knowing our safe boundaries, just like a parent helps a toddler to know their safe boundaries, where our world is very limited, to having the self-confidence and the maturity to then move beyond those safe boundaries in order to connect with, relate to, and embrace others. That's true for us as each human being. I think it's true for us as societies, as a nation. And it's true and important in terms of our international relationships. And it does alarm me and scare me to see the rise of nationalism again in Europe and in the world, as nations once again seem to be more and more thinking about themselves over and against, or in opposition to one another, or in competition with one another too at least, instead of looking for common ground and common humanity. So, to be able to love our neighbours as ourselves, as we think about this whole series, whether it's our actual neighbours in the street, whether it's the foreigner, the stranger, the alien in our midst, which of course might also be in our street, whether it's our work colleagues, whether it's the despised or the poor, whether it's other Christians in our church family. In order to be able to love our neighbours as ourselves, it's no use us just being told that. We kind of know that that's true and right. But actually, it's about us growing in maturity as human beings. So there's actually, out of our human maturing, our spiritual and psychological growth, we will find that actually this is the natural way that we grow. And we will be able to truly love the foreigner in our midst, and indeed everybody else, if we allow ourselves to grow to that place of connecting with and embracing and engaging with people who might be a bit different from ourselves. Amen.